Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on the Everything app at jwright929. As always, you can listen to us on the radio dial, 929 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial and you want to keep listening, you can do so by streaming us on the Odyssey app, free to download, free to listen. You can also stream us on iHeartRadio as well as TuneIn Radio. You can check out the live streams over on YouTube, Twitch, and X, the Everything app. It is all happening on X. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey.
Let's welcome to the program. My company is, each and every Tuesday on the program. He is the host of VSiN Primetime. You can also check out the VSiN College Football, College Basketball Betting Podcast, which he is the host of. He's also on the Everything app at One Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
Howdy. Howdy, howdy. How we doing?
Well, got the old, about 10:15 this morning, got the old notification that my AT&T internet was down. So I'm in the move of, all right, we've got, I don't know if I'd call it like severe weather, but we have storms today. And so I'm like, all right, maybe the power's out. But then I went and checked, the power's out. I did not notify my wife asking her, hey, is the power out? Because I also knew she would know if the power was out and I would know if the power was out because she would let me know that the power is out. So I was like, all right, so now I've got this decision. Do I go and check on it or do I just sit there and hope that by the time I get home, it's fine? I made the decision to go and check on it. There's no, the wires are not down. I tried every hard reset, the get on the app. So I don't know if I'm watching tonight's early game because it'll be on NBC Sports Network and Peacock. So I have no idea if I will be watching Cleveland and Detroit. I would say right now odds are not good.
Well, don't worry. You'll just get to watch Lakers and Thunder with a 14.5, 15-point spread later tonight.
Yeah, no, I know that's what everybody is looking forward to. We'll talk more about the NBA later on in the program. I want to start, of course, though, if maybe Bad Blood could be back in recruiting. You know, now in this transactional universe, I feel like we've lost real negative recruiting, but locally we might have some that's back. So I want to talk about it with Tim. Eric Astline is going to join us during the next segment. We'll get his thoughts on the Grizzlies, the NBA playoffs, and more. We'll get into the list during hour number two. We'll discuss the NBA there as well. Also, Onyx Odds over on the Everything app has some NBA comps. Only one was, I thought, truly, I thought it was a stretch, but we'll get into those. I want Tim's thoughts on that. Get into college football news during the third hour. Also take a look at tonight's action. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But let me fill you in on the drama, at least online, locally, last night. You ready, Tim?
Okay, I'm ready.
All right. George, you're going to have to help fill me in on this detail. I missed the part where how significantly was Memphis recruiting Matt Mbole?
He went on a full-on visit. Like, okay. He was on campus, visited, went through the training facilities, all that. I want to say he even took pictures in gear.
Okay.
So it was not, they're not involved.
That's the full kit and caboodle. That is the rolling out the red carpet. That is the move that Memphis does when they want somebody. Okay, are you ready? Last night, we find out that Matt Mbole has committed to UAB, another American conference foe, but it didn't stop there, to quote one Eric Cartman. Steve Irvine of the Birmingham Banner said that signee Matt Mbole said of his choice, quote, "I don't think I was going to develop my game and a professional career in Memphis. Coach AK, Andy Kennedy, intends to develop my game over the long term so that I will be able of playing at the professional level after college." My guy AK then chimed in on Twitter, quote tweeting, Jesse Bopp of, I believe he is the, is he the assistant or is he director of ops? He's the assistant at UAB. Relationships still mattered with a dragon emoji. AK then responds with buying and the money bag versus developing with the 100 emoji, hashtag exceeding expectations. And we were off and running. So a couple of things here. I think there is plenty to criticize Penny Hardaway in terms of maybe what he gets out of talent. I'm not sure development's where I would go. He's got a pretty strong track record of getting guys to the professional level. Like if you look at his first season, Jeremiah Martin makes it to the NBA. Now, Jeremiah was already here at Memphis, and I don't know how much credit to give him or not give him, but nonetheless, he has played NBA games. The next season, Precious Achiuwa, Lester Quinones, Damian Baugh, James Wiseman, all NBA players. I should say, all of them are NBA players, not all NBA players. Lester Quinones, Musa Cisse, Damian Baugh on his next roster. Jalen Duren, Lester again for his third year. Josh Minot, not sure how much credit to give him on that one, but Minot did play in the NBA. And Amani Bates has played a cup of coffee in the NBA. None on the, ironically, the 22-23 team, which you could make the argument one of his best teams. No one there. David Jones, Naquan Tomlin, all played in the, have played NBA at least G League or better. In the 23-24 season, Musa Cisse back in the 24-25 season, and then we'll see on this class. But I think the larger point for me is, of all the ways I would attack Penny Hardaway, I'm not sure it's necessarily development, because he's also had plenty of other guys, like Dane Danger, I think, has signed internationally. Like, development's not really one of them. But I do enjoy... Perhaps, like, I feel like one of the, a few things that the NIL era have killed, the secret recruit, guy secretly on campus, can't get it out, we don't have the secret recruit anymore, miss that guy. The day-to-day updates of recruiting, I feel like that's kind of gone by the wayside.
Are people still tracking planes?
That's more coaching search.
Is that more coaching?
Yeah. But
we did have we had a little bit of that, like with the big time recruits.
Yeah, we saw some. I feel like that's always after the fact, though.
Maybe.
Like, we had, I think Matt Brown at Extra Points tracked how much money was spent flying jets on recruiting, but that was not like right. In real time. That was more like, here's what they spent on recruiting. But I really do feel like we've been missing out a lot on negative recruiting. And maybe I wonder if indeed he could be back.
So, fill me in a little bit. Obviously, they're conference rivals. Has this been a brewing rivalry between Andy Kennedy and Penny Hardaway over the years? Like, where did this come from, where you've got the quotes coming out yesterday and then the tweets coming out yesterday?
Yeah.
Is this new, or has this been going on for a while?
So AK and Penny, I've always thought, have been pretty cool. What I would say is, it is of the teams in the American, as much as you can probably have a rival, UAB would only fit the bill in that there's some history there, but there was such a gap in between them being a regular competitor, and for a while Memphis had been so ahead of them. I think what this really feels like to me is, it's AK kind of rallying his fan base, because his fan base cares a lot more about the rivalry, I think, than Penny Hardaway's does. Memphis is kind of in rival purgatory, though. Like, they want to...
They're trying to revamp it with Louisville.
Yeah.
With that series again.
They would like to play Tennessee, but Tennessee will not do that.
You mean Rick Barnes won't do that?
Correct. Rick Barnes will not do that. But also in the conference, like, all the teams that they had kind of started to build rivalries against have left.
Houston.
Right.
Cincinnati.
Houston for a while was there.
Cincinnati was a long, long-term rival. I think Cincinnati's still the longest played rivalry, or tied for the longest played rivalry. And they were building one with UCF, but yeah, they're all gone. And then Tulane's in this weird spot where they're more of a rivalry than I think Memphis wants to admit. But I don't necessarily know if that it's this weird thing in basketball where Tulane basketball has been nowhere close to what Memphis has under Penny Hardaway, but they've actually had decent amount of success against the Tigers previously under Ron Hunter, who's no longer there. It'd been kind of like a thorn in their side.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking back because UAB's only been in the conference for, what, 3 years?
UAB is one of the replacements from when Cincinnati, Houston, UCF. And UCF leave. They do have a trophy in football, the Battle of the Bones.
Isn't it ribs?
Yeah.
It's no civil conflict, but it's...
No civil conflict, but...
Could it just be an online thing? Like, Penny's not nearly as online.
I think AK
is a lot
more active. AK's definitely more online. I also think it's one of those moves that you do to kind of rally your own fan base.
Right, like, it's less of an actual dig at someone else, and it's more like...
It's like, hey look
guys.
At us. We just beat...
Right.
Because
the team with the most money in the conference... at a recruit.
Well, and I would also say this about AK. I love the guy. I don't know if development's the first thing that comes to mind. It's almost like AK's kind of the college basketball equivalent of the college football coach that runs the offensive gimmick where it's like he'll if you're an undersized guard that can score, you have a green light. I don't know if necessarily I would say like though development is what I would come to mind. It's more of like he does what it takes to win at this level.
I'll just say this, I mean, outside of, and you guys would know more, and George, you mentioned it, that it seemed like Memphis was all in on this dude, this recruit. Anything that we can get to get a little bad blood going?
Oh, yeah, no, I think I'm in on it. Especially in this league where it's just so, I don't even know if milquetoast is the right word. It's just like the complete lacking of juice. I think you could also say this though, George. UAB was the preseason favorite Yaxels last year.
So not this past year, the
correct.
One prior, which is when Memphis won the league.
And UAB was still supposed to be better last year. I think USF and UAB were tied for co-favorites, or like they were 1-1 1B. But AK has not. I think AK is probably a little underperformed the last 2 years. So this is this like to get everybody off the scent? Like, hey, look over there.
Certainly could be. I mean, what other, we've seen high profile moves at other spots in the American. Obviously Charlotte, USF, new coaches, and them bringing in some of their guys back. But before this, have we seen or heard much from UAB?
No, you know what I also think this is, though?
They won the conference tournament their first year, right?
They won it with Jelly.
Yeah. Yeah, that was their first year.
Their first year was the year, the Javon Quinterly, that year where the Tigers.
Yaxel.
Correct.
He's just jealous that Yaxel went on to become what he did at Michigan.
Well,
he's just lashing out.
I was also thinking this.
He's going to take. I mean, clearly when Yaxel Lendenborg gets drafted, you know, either end of lottery, mid-first round, you know he's going to take credit for that.
I think this is true, George. The only player that he recruited at Ole Miss that became an NBA player was Terrence Davis.
That sounds right.
I mean, there were some guys that played overseas.
Right, and like some G League players.
Also, the Ole Miss job was a lot harder than it is now.
Absolutely, 100%.
You know what I actually kind of think this might be? Best defense is a good offense. You know what I suspect might have happened?
What's up?
I suspect UAB might have given him a little bit more money than Memphis offered.
Honestly, I could see that because Memphis, and they also probably did offer him a different role. This would be a supplemental, secondary big to Cornelius Williams, who signed last week.
Correct. And he's going to be offered more playing time, whatnot. And then this, however, though, just kind of throws it off the scent of, we just want a bidding war.
That's basically what recruiting is nowadays.
Pretty much. Although it got us into the conversation. So Cobb yesterday, how much have you kept up with Kentucky?
Not a ton. I know they've been, I've seen the digs at Mark Pope and his, at least in recent weeks. I don't know where they're at right now with their.
So it's not been going well. And now they're at the point of, it's so late in the portal, what is the answer? And it feels like the only possible answers are 5 years to play five. And that opens up new additional guys. I saw with Will Wade and LSU, it seems like they're turning their attention to Europe. I don't know if that was the plan all along or if that is the, we've got to get guys in. But it is kind of interesting how, even though money seems to be the most significant deciding factor, still nobody wants to, nobody's like, yeah, like, oh, no one's going to come out and be like, yeah, no, we just gave him the best offer.
I mean, according to 247, Kentucky in the transfer portal, 13th in the nation. No five stars, but two fours and a two threes.
I think the issue is also where's Louisville on that list?
Number one.
Okay, where's Tennessee?
Two.
Is Vandy ahead of them?
No. Vandy's 18, but they have five.
How many other SEC teams are ahead of them?
According to 247 Sports, it's Louisville 1, Tennessee 2, Texas 3,
okay.
Indiana 4.
That's also a border state.
Miami 5, UNC 6, Providence 7, A&M, SEC 8, and Missouri is at 12, one spot ahead of them as well. And Vandy's at 18.
And I think the biggest lesson in this era is, man, if you push your chips in, you got to deliver. It doesn't mean you got to win the national title, but you can't have the type of season Kentucky had. They didn't spend all that money to get bounced in the second round. And even if you want to use like the comp of, well, that happened to UConn two seasons ago, it's like, well, Danny Hurley had back-to-back national titles. Like, he was going to have the opportunity to get it right. And then when you consider that who you're going to be consistently compared to is John Calipari, it's like it feels like everybody's happier over in Fayetteville.
I mean, I guess the issue too is they only have one freshman coming in at Kentucky.
Right. It's not like they can say, well, look at our recruiting class.
Right. Like Duke is like 13th in the portal or 12th, but they're also bringing in five freshmen and 3 5-stars. Arkansas is bringing in 3 5-stars. You know, so they're not crushing it in the portal, but they also brought in one freshman. Like Western Kentucky, according to 247 Sports, is ahead of them in freshman recruiting.
We were talking about this yesterday. So, of course, after Jamal Mosley gets fired, everyone's connecting the dots to Billy Donovan.
Yep.
I was
even though there's reports that it might be Tibbs.
Well, I mean, we were mentioning, of course, you know, that could always be the negotiation.
Sure.
Bring somebody in there to maybe get the price more to your liking. Do you think, if you're an elite level coach, would you rather be in the NBA or in college?
I would say a couple of years ago, it was no-brainer NBA. I think now college, because it's so matter of fact, you don't have to be sliding into the DMs of freshman high school trying to, you know, stay on top. I think it's like, hey, we're going to offer you $3 million and you're going to get Nike sponsorship, whatever. I would still say the NBA slightly, but I think college basketball, at least at the elite levels, I know at the mid-major levels, because, you know, the mid-major levels is really challenging, right? It's Everyone's on a one-year deal. If you bring in a guy, you develop them, they're going to leave. They're going to go to a higher level. You know, now it's the same thing you always had to deal with. Are you going to go to the NBA or are you going to come back? Like, it does feel like, you know, using Michigan, for example, I mean, it feels like things right now for Dusty May are pretty good gig he's got going on right now.
I think the other issue is,
what would you say?
I think it's complicated.
I think if you're just
my thought would be like this. Look at the NBA jobs that are open. Okay? You can make a case that the Magic is an opportunity.
Yeah, I agree.
But if you look at the other ones that are going to be open, do you really want that Pelicans job?
No.
I guess you could say the opportunity roster-wise for
your guy Taylor Jenkins, do you want... Is that a good gig that he took in Milwaukee?
I think you have to say he took a gig, and a gig that he had familiarity with because he had been an assistant.
And it's a gig with, as of now, you have a top three player in the world, but how disgruntled is said top three player in the world, and how is he going to be on your team next year?
Yes, I think that is all fair. But like with Portland...
That's the most interesting one.
Like, that's a good roster, but you have the situation where the owner's on record basically by saying, like, I want to pay well below market value. So,
is that Josh Schertz report true?
It wouldn't shock me.
Okay.
That's the $1 to $1.5 million for the coach.
Correct.
Yeah, it's like, I make more at St. Louis.
Even though I think that's definitely true. But where I can see it make sense is if your NBA assistant, it's a shot, and the roster's good enough, and if you can make it work, either A, you can get a new contract from Portland, or you can use that to get another gig. Because my thing is, I would be fine... If I'm betting on myself, I'm sitting there going, okay, I'll do this dance for you, but I'm basically making it a
short term.
Yeah, 1 year with an option.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, looking at it this year, that's a great bet to make. Two awesome bigs, physical, strong, young. Damian Lillard's coming back. Scoot, like, that's a great bet to make. I'll be surprised to see it at who ends up taking it.
And the reason why I say it's complicated is more times than not, I think like the best NBA job is still probably better than the best college job. The problem is, how do you get said job? Because usually the good jobs are not open. And so the ones that are open, like, I think the best case you could make is, if you get into a situation where you're coveted, like the best spot to be in is probably where Brad Stevens was with Boston.
Sure.
Where Boston goes, hey, this is a full teardown, full rebuild, but we are giving you, I think at the time it was like a 6-year deal. And I think all of it was guaranteed. So they were going to be patient. And they were going to give him the opportunity to get an actual roster and then see what he could do. That doesn't seem to be the way that everybody's going. And then I think the other thing that's interesting about the Magic is, other than Mike Brown to the Knicks last year, when you really look at what actually the actual hires that were made, it was mostly like internal elevations or guys that had been in their development program and like maybe they bounced somewhere else, but it was people that had familiarity with the organization.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think if you asked... I would say if you asked even the hardest of hardcore NBA fans, how many of them can tell you who the San Antonio Spurs head coach is?
Oh, I'm betting under half.
I would say way under half.
I mean, real.
You'd be like, oh, the young guy,
I like Mitch.
All right, let's do this. Throw out a team. Let's see if I can name it. Name the coach. Ooh. It is Mitch Johnson there, obviously.
Wizards.
No chance.
I feel like I can picture him, but I
Brian
can't.
Brian Keefe?
I can't tell you yes or no.
Yeah, that's yeah.
Is the Brooklyn gig too fresh in the news?
See, I'm not as down on the Brooklyn. I would need to do more.
No, I meant their coach.
Did he get in trouble?
No. He got extended, actually.
So, but like that's my point is I actually don't hate that gig because when you look at it, it's like, yeah, they've got a bunch of dart throws, but they do have a bunch of dart throws, and they're not putting the pressure on you right now.
Right.
Was it Keefe?
It is Brian Keefe, yeah. What about Toronto?
That one I know because he's Darko Rajkovic, that's cheating.
That's cheating because he's here. He's awesome.
And he still wears a St. Jude pin. He was the lead assistant here.
Phoenix?
It is the guy that played, was he a Michigan State assistant? I think he was the GA when Ishbia was on the team. No chance.
Oh,
on the
I would
name
have had
there.
No clue.
No chance
Jordan,
on the name.
Jordan Ott.
But I'm pretty sure he was the Michigan
he was.
State.
Yeah, he yeah. was at Michigan State.
Yep. I could tell you Baya. The Charlotte coach. Why do I keep saying Denny, Danny?
Think Hamilton. Charles Lee.
Yeah, that's right.
It is Charles Lee, yeah.
Think a bunch of the others you probably know, like Indiana.
Well, Carlisle.
Jim Carrey. I would say the rest are relatively.
Doug Christie, I know it's Sacramento because he played at Pepperdine. We could do Clippers, Lakers.
I mean, I would say 99.9% of NBA fans outside the city of Memphis wouldn't know who the Grizzlies coach is.
Oh, I think that's more than fair.
Oh, yeah, easily. I mean, we know Utah because we've been, you know, eyes on them all season.
Yeah.
But to your initial point, you know, Mark Daigneault was the G League guy. And then when Billy Donovan left, they brought him over, and now he's... I mean, when you look at the rise of some of these guys, like Joe Mazzulla, who now probably is not in the firmest standing on their fan base's mind, but he was second row Joe.
No, I mean, that was to George's point, when Ime had the... when they basically let fire Ime for the inappropriate relationship, they basically like were leaking out like, well, this would have been a lot easier a few months ago when Hardy was on the staff.
Right.
Because they would have just promoted Hardy. I also think with Mazzulla, I think there are better years to criticize him.
I think
he did a pretty good job with the team, all things considered.
Here's the thing. Yes, it's what's freshest in your mind. Okay, you blow a 3-1 lead to the Philadelphia 76ers, who, by the way, were getting healthier, and they were a team preseason that at least people in my world, the gambling world, were telling me that they liked Philadelphia to win the East this year with Vijay Edgecombe, Tyrese Maxey, and Joel Embiid. They were not supposed to be the betting favorite to win the East. So I get it. All these Boston fans, the sky is falling. Cry me a bleeping river up there in Boston. Good God. You guys were just in the Super Bowl. I'm sorry your football coach had some off-the-field issues. He's still going to be there this year. You still have Drake May. You're fine.
There was something as, and I think you would agree with me, right? The division opponent, even though your Commies fandom has... But the Eagles is always the team I've always hated the most. There was something oddly satisfying about the 76ers winning that game. And I don't really know what it was. Now, we should also...
I do love the meltdown. I just... There are
certain... Well, we should also
cities.
Cry them a river. They had to also deal with Vrabel and Rossini in the Titanic picture on Inside the NBA.
So good.
I love how There were questions. George, where was that question I saw yesterday? It might have been Front Office Sports was pondering whether or not NFL schedule releases will mock the Patriots and Vrabel and Rossini. It's like, yeah, they are.
Zero doubt in my mind.
Yeah, they're going to.
I mean, I think we've had this discussion before, but now the more I think about it, it's like, I can't believe I cheered for the Red Sox in 04. I was like happy for them to get that championship, because as soon as they won that championship, it flipped and they were just like in your face, as annoying as ever. The Celtics have never really been, I mean, they had late 90s, early 2000s. They were not very good. They were pretty mediocre. But since they got the big three, and I even liked them in 08. Like, that's the funny thing is I think back on it.
It was also rooting against the Lakers.
That's true.
And that was like peak spoiled Laker franchise.
I mean, the city of Boston has to be probably the most spoiled city right now.
Well, the Red Sox stink.
Red Sox stink, and their ownership is awful, so that's hilarious. But they still have won how many World Series since 04? Three or four?
So they've won three thanks to the Cardinals. They've got two, the Cardinals and the Rockies.
Right.
So they got
07 was the Rockies, 04 was the Cardinals, and then
I had so many Denver.
I thought they won four. No?
I think they got beat. Didn't the Astros beat them?
Because they won one with Cora that they probably weren't supposed
to. The Dodgers beat them, right?
So they've won the World Series in 18, 13, 07, 04. Yeah,
they have four.
Yeah, because they smashed the Dodgers in 2018.
Okay, so that's four championships since Belichick and Brady got there. Six, right? Because Brady has seven, right?
Six championships and 10 Super Bowl appearances. Right, because this year was the 10th, because Brady went 6-3.
Correct. Well, Brady went 7-3 in Super Bowl, 6-3 at the Pats.
6-3 at the Patriots. So
and then they've got with Bledsoe. They had another one with Bledsoe.
Also the Packers.
And then the 85, they were the sacrificial lamb to the 85 Bears.
And then the Celtics have won
two titles. Played for two more. Is that right? Right, they lost to the Lakers once, and then they lost to the Warriors, and then a bunch of Eastern Conference Finals.
And the Bruins have been pretty.
Bruins won a title, I think, in 11, if I recall, my senior year, because my roommate was from Boston. And then they played for the Blues, I think they played. But, like, the Bruins have been consistently good up until the last couple of years.
Well, wasn't it like 2 or 3 years ago they were
the one seed.
They were a juggernaut.
The one seed that did.
Yeah, that was 22-23. They won the President's Trophy.
And they lost to the Panthers, right? And that was like the beginning of the Panthers.
Yep.
No, I think it's.
I remember I worked with someone. I think he might have been a boss who is no longer a boss. And he was like, Bruins are going to cruise to the Stanley Cup. I was like, okay, good luck with that. Because historically, President's Trophy winning teams always win, right?
It does feel like we finally might break the streak.
We might.
Although, man, they got some goaltending problems.
Dude,
which I guess, hey, listen, if you can go and get the Predators backup goalie and make him your starter, I guess you just have to.
I mean, George, you could speak to it more so than me for sure. Is this year unique in the sense that every game is pretty much awesome? Outside of, I mean, I guess the Hurricanes destroyed in the first round, but they needed overtime yesterday to win. And they
that was a 4-game sweep, and I think 3 of the games were decided basically like in the last minutes or
overtime. Yeah. I keep bringing it up. It feels different than years past since they changed up the
seeding,
the playoff like seeding and bracket situation. So now when you have the 2-3, where those really should be a 2-seed or a 3 or 4-seed playing against each other in the first round, first rounds have been awesome. And then sometimes if a wild card team gets through, that's where it starts to be like, maybe not as good.
And not to say that we talk about it during the day on, the shows on ESPN, but the fact that it's on network, on cable, where we can easily find it,
it's
being
great.
On ESPN or TNT, like, all right, I know where those channels are. I mean, there's no more versus. Like, hell, the NBA, I'm curious, because, like, I don't know about you, but this is bizarre. Like, these overlapping Peacock games, and then we're on Amazon on Friday. Like, if you're a casual fan, like, it's our job. We have to watch these games, and we'll find them. But, like, if you're a casual fan, hockey's so much easier to find right now.
I have no idea. Like, I'm saying this stood out to me.
On a night-to-night basis, you have no clue
I was gonna
where
say,
the
this
NBA
is,
games are.
This is anecdotal. So I stress this is – I don't know this to be true, but – I cannot recall ever seeing on NBA.com at the top of the story links where to watch tonight. Like,
I mean, for up until.
I mean, to your point, though,
up
basically,
until this year,
hockey
it was just
is
like ESPN or TNT.
Well,
right.
I mean, hockey's basically flipped with the right. NBA, which is you either knew it was a. And now there has been some overlap. Like last night when there was one of the. I think the Hurricanes were on ESPN.
Yeah, and then there was.
And the other two were on Turner.
Right. And then when that first game went into overtime,
yeah. They moved the Ducks to ESPN2.
Right.
And the Ducks and Knights to ESPN2. But they've done the move where it's like you basically know it's in one of two places. Now, like last night, I was in that spot where when you realized it felt like. The way that the Knicks closed the first half, you kind of thought Philly was going to wave the white towel or white flag because, you know, like they just played game seven. Like, hey, they got to figure out a way to get a split. You're sitting there going like, all right, I want to watch Spurs and Wolves. And you're like, wait, what? They're putting the score in the corner. And then you realize like, oh, I've got to go to Peacock. And then there's been random nights where it's like, I feel like it's on Prime, but it's like, at least with the Friday, I'm conditioned from the season. Friday night's a Prime night, but hasn't Thursday now also become a Prime night?
And they have nights, now correct me if I'm wrong, can you not double box Amazon?
Amazon has been experimenting with the multi view. I have not found it to be quite as user-friendly as YouTube, but I was able to fire it up, yes. But then there will be the other thing where it's like your TV pops up and it's like, do you want to watch this this playoff game? And you're like, yes. And then it sends you to like the, and not that it's like a horrible thing, but it sends you to the StatCast or whatever, you know, the alternate broadcast, and you go like, wait, what? Like, am I playing a video game? Like, you don't really know, like. And I'm not saying those altcasts are bad, but you also have to, like, if you think that's the main broadcast that they're sending you to, it creates confusion. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Eric Hasline joins the program next. Let's talk some Grizzlies and more with him right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. That music means we welcome to the program the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. He is Eric Hasline, kind enough to join us each and every Tuesday on the program. Eric, we were discussing this yesterday. What should we be doing this week to prepare for trying to move up in the draft lottery on Sunday?
I mean, I wouldn't take the major league route and start sacrificing live chickens or anything like that.
Yeah, that's a tough one because, you know, it's also raining outside, so that means I got to go figure out where to locate it. But, yeah, no, I think that's probably fair.
Well, as Wesley Snipes said, we can't have guys puking in the locker room before the game. I don't know. Just it's such a luck of the draw. And every year at this time I hear all these, oh, I mean, look what happened. Like LeBron went to Cleveland, Derrick Rose went to Chicago. It's totally rigged. Doesn't matter anyway. It's not rigged. It's just not. I mean, it's a lottery. It's luck of the draw. It's, you know, any of these things, even like the real lottery, how does nobody win for like 3 weeks or 4 weeks and it climbs to a massive number and then someone wins and then 4 days later somebody else wins. It is what it is. Just, you know, kind of tuck and pray. You just hope something good can happen and that karma comes your way because it's been a rough go obviously two out of the last 3 years. And the last time they were in this spot, they didn't move up, you know, at all, if anything, with the Zach Edey pick. And
seventh, they were seventh and dropped to ninth. So I looked it up.
Yeah.
Nine times.
Almost similar.
Yeah, nine times the Grizzlies have dropped in the lottery. Five times they've moved up. Three times they've stayed the same, according to Real GM.
Yeah. I mean, the obviously the one that stung the most was the Kevin Durant, Greg Oden year. And, you know, I think I told that story where we had an ESPN camera downtown at the Flying Saucer. We had a big party and, you know, everybody's cheering. And then all of a sudden the sixth pick comes up and I'm like, oh, no. And I'm trying to sell it. And so someone told me, like, I distinctly remember you going, hey, you know, there's been some really good players at four. Let's not hang our heads. And, you know, I think that was met with a couple of your number one signs that aren't really your number one.
The one finger salute.
Drift. On the way out. And I'm like, it's not my fault. Well, you ended up getting Mike Conley. So it did work out in the end. And kudos to Mike for his performance last night, by the way. But, you know, it was, you were thinking Oden or Durant. And even that year, I was like, boy, I'd rather be number two. Just because if one of these guys doesn't pan out, you don't want that to be what determines the future of your franchise. Now, somehow Portland was able to rebound from that unfortunate situation with Oden not being what everybody thought he was. But I don't think there were many teams out there, if any, that wouldn't have, you know, taken Oden number one, and unless they already had a big, they felt pretty good about moving forward. So, I mean, I just think you just hope for the best. I think getting all worked up about it, it doesn't do anybody any good. You think as positive thoughts as you possibly can, and you deal with the outcome when it comes. And I don't ever remember it being on a Sunday, let alone a Sunday for Mother's Day. I always thought it was like a Thursday night, you know, in the second round, and so you could get something going. I mean, that's the problem. Like, you're not going to have a lot of people, like, glued to the television necessarily for this as much as you would, because people are going to be spending time with their families, and it's a day about moms. So it's kind of hard to go, hey, honey, put the celebration for you on hold for just a second. We got to watch this draft lottery. So kudos to her if she says, hey, that's what I want to do for Mother's Day. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. It's just such a random occurrence. And now the way they're talking about the shifting of it, it might make it a little easier. I liked it when it was, they had the actual ping pong balls in the drum and they showed them come out.
Yeah.
They showed them come out and you saw it, but that doesn't make for great TV. I mean, the drama of it, of unfolding 14 through, you know, five is what builds the drama. You know, I remember watching the first lottery and it went backwards, and whoever's picked, or, you know, Black got picked first, that's who picked at the last spot in the lottery. And people were like, well, shouldn't that have been the team that won it? And then there was all the conspiracy theory that they put the Knicks plaque in the freezer, and anytime David Stern felt something cold, he wasn't supposed to pull it out. And I was in San Francisco at the time, and Golden State had, I think, either the worst or second worst record. And I was like, oh boy, it'd be great to get Patrick Ewing. So you're probably not getting Patrick Ewing. Everybody had an equal chance, and obviously you end up going the Knicks. Well, the Warriors ended up with Chris Mullin, who turned out to be really good. The Kings ended up with Joe Klein, who was an absolute monster at Arkansas, but never had the NBA career like of an all-star. But he was a solid big, and you know, the Hawks took John Konkak, and you look at that draft and you go, oh wow, there was a big differential in where guys ended up with their career paths. So, you know, look, wherever you pick, we've seen guys in recent drafts that have gone in various slots that have been really good and really solid and really good players. I heard you guys, or I heard earlier today, was it you guys talking about the New Orleans GM taking credit for, or the New Orleans situation? I think it might have been earlier on NBA radio where they were talking about, well, he's, you know, this guy got hired and he, you know, drafted Trey Murphy. And I'm like, eh, no, he didn't. Trey Murphy was actually drafted by the Grizzlies and was part of
the trade,
Valanciunas trade. And that was the year the Grizzlies really, I think, as a front office, believed they could either get Josh Giddey or Franz Wagner. And they both went earlier than expected. And they said, well, we really like Zaire Williams too, and we'll make that switch. And it turned out Trey Murphy turned out to be the better player at this time. But the first 2 years, it didn't look like that at all. It looked like Zaire was going to be the better player. So it's about, you know, a long-term path more than just a one-year deal, and that's what you got to look for. And you know, that's why those guys get paid. I say it all the time. I'm not one to second-guess picks. There's been picks in the past years ago. I didn't understand in the third year of the draft here, you know, the year before they won 50 games, that summer where they took Troy Bell and Dante Jones, the picks to me at the time did not make sense. And I was like, I don't understand this. Now, I can't recall exactly who I thought they should go with, but, you know, neither one of them really panned out to be long-term Grizzlies, Dante longer than Troy Bell. But it's not a perfect science, and you're going to miss on guys. And that's the problem with it when you're a team that's hurting to build out a roster and you're not, you know, a competitive, high-level competitive team. That's what you need young players for. So, you know, with this draft reform, people are saying, well, how do you rebuild then if you're not a team that can, you know, make a couple of high picks in consecutive years and make it work? And puts a lot of pressure on those guys up front. It's a hard job, and it's not an easy one. And so it's not a position that I envy. I mean, they do get paid very well to be in those positions, but they have to answer for a lot too.
I have good news for you, though. Grizzlies have entered the lottery with the sixth best odds three times previously.
Mm-hmm.
They've moved up to two twice.
Mm-hmm.
They stayed at six once. The second time that they, or the very first time they moved up to two, though, that was the Otis Thorpe trade.
And here's the wild thing.
Anthony.
I can remember both of those times exactly where I was vividly. The Otis Thorpe one, because it had to be number one to keep it.
Correct.
I actually got a call. There was an old show that was syndicated out of Memphis, and I don't know that it was on any local stations, but it was called Southern Sports Tonight.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it was in everywhere, and I'm in there helping them
out. Who else
was
Maxi? I remember that, because one of the guys would just do the show from Destin.
Yeah, he wasn't there that day, and I forgot. I'm blanking on the guy's name. He ended up moving to Florida, but I'm in there helping him out, kind of answering calls and doing kind of like I was in King George's role. And it was fun. I enjoyed doing it. And we're watching the lottery, but we're talking college sports. And, you know, he keeps going to me like, hey, the Grizzlies plaque hasn't been picked. And I was like, well, that's awesome. You know, that would be phenomenal. And then, of course, the three comes up and it's Denver. And you're like, okay, great. And then the two comes up and you're like, oh, man, they don't even get it. It goes to Detroit. And then it's Cleveland. And come to find out from people who were in the room, the Grizzlies' number when they picked one wasn't even close. I think the Hawks' number was one off, and in one of the one of the number sequences, one of the numbers was off, and then it was Cleveland. And so then you go back to the Stu Jackson deal where, and I vividly remember that trade because it affected Sacramento because Otis Thorpe had played in Sacramento previously and was beloved. And he basically told them, do not trade for me. I do not want to go to Vancouver. I do not want to play in Canada. I don't want the tax implications that come with that. The team's not very good. And it was almost a move when they made it, like, what? Why are they making this move? This is like a move a playoff team makes, and they're not a playoff team. And Otis never reported. So then he was subsequently shipped to Vancouver from Vancouver to Sacramento for a guy named Michael Smith, who was a tough-nosed player. They called him the animal, hard-nosed rebounder, defender, kind of a Draymond Green-like player before Draymond. And I want to say Bobby Hurley at the time, if I'm not mistaken, because Bobby had had the car accident, and the Kings had kind of said it doesn't look like it's going to work out. And that's when Bobby ended up with the Vancouver Grizzlies. So, and all that said, you gave up the future number two pick. And by my understanding, the front office at that time did everything they could to see if they could either get the pick back or convey it to Detroit earlier. But in those circles, you know, those guys talk about what drafts are going to look like, what, 2-3 years down the road. Hey, we've seen this kid that's a sophomore in high school that looks like he's a franchise type changing player if he continues to develop. Well, they had heard about some kid in Akron, Ohio that was pretty special. So they said, yeah, no, we'll hold off on that one. So The other time for the jaw draft, I remember my son was playing coach pitch baseball, and I was helping coach, and I was pitching, and I go out for the inning, and you know, I think I only hit three kids that day.
Proud of you.
Which was a good day. Yeah, good day. Tough to try to groove a pitch to kids. It's a lot harder than people think. And the one poor kid I hit, I think, six times during the year. Not hard, obviously, but I come back in, and my phone is on the metal bench at the field we were at. And it's just vibrating. I'm like, what is going on? And I had kind of just, it had just kind of slipped my mind that the lottery was that night. And I look down and I've got like 37 messages. I'm worried something like tragic has happened to somebody that I care about. And I look up and they're like, this is really happening. Oh my gosh, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. And I realize what's happening. And then I got it after the plaque had been revealed and everybody's like, hey, two is great. You know, it's not Zion, but you know, either R.J. Barrett or Ja Morant would be phenomenal. And then R.J. Barrett came out and said, I don't want to play there. And the front office said, good, we weren't going to take you anyway, so don't worry about it.
No, I mean, and isn't that the story they told John?
It's history.
I think they told John Chicago they were taking him.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think they had alluded that to R.J., but because R.J. had come out immediately and said, I don't want to go there. And I was like, don't worry about it. You're not. So... and look, for all that's, you know, the way it ended, it's tough, as you know, I've said to people in the past, you know, when you leave a job or you leave an organization, and I've done this in my own life, is, hey, look, even though it's ending badly, because usually when it ends, it's 99 or 95% of the time it ended for not good reasons. It ended badly. You know, you're still thankful of the journey. And I said, look, even though it's ending this way and it's not a fun thing to have to do, I really appreciate the opportunity and, you know, this to be here. And, you know, I wish you nothing but the best. I don't wish ill will. I think that's, you know, that's silly. So even though if this jaw thing does end up, you know, on the path it seems to be on, at the end of the day, you look back and you go, okay, yeah, it could have in a lot of people's minds been more, but the ride we went on was amazing. I mean, it's going to be some of the fondest memories of my life in this, you know, wild ride of a career. But at the end of the day, you still go, oh, was there meat left on the bone, so to speak? And I think that's pretty much the thing that you look at anytime, especially in professional sports, because they're in a position right now where they've clearly made a decision and had to be proactive. And sometimes you hold on to core groups and guys too long. And I think Boston showed it's sometimes much more beneficial to just say, okay, we think the run is either going to end next year or the year after, or maybe even 2 years down the road, but we're going to get ahead of it now while guys have value and we can stockpile to try to run this a different way, but get back to being that high level team. Because if we try to hang on and just try to make the playoffs and you're just in that 7-8 spot and kind of what we call NBA purgatory, that's not great. Because you're going to have to do it anyway, and then you don't have the same value.
All right, last thing I wanted to ask you before we let you go.
Mm-hmm.
How big do you think it was for JB to avoid that? You know, not only do they avoid losing in the first round as the one seed, but they come back from 3-1. You know, they're one of whatever four teams in history to do that. How big do you think that was for him and his job status?
Well, it's certainly hell. I don't think he was in any jeopardy. First of all, I think the world of JB Bickerstaff. I think he's been in some really difficult situations prior to Detroit. I mean, if you look at his first opportunity in Houston, to my understanding, they wanted to keep him. And to my understanding, he said, you know, I don't think this is the best fit for me. That was when James Harden was, you know, James Harden MVP type level, but it was kind of all built around that. And JB's got maybe a different way of coaching and a different philosophy, and he just thought it was a better move to leave. Then he comes to Memphis as the lead assistant for David Fizdale, who he's very close with. And whether you believe in what the head coach is doing or not as an assistant, you're still close with them in almost all situations. Sometimes there are situations where they're not super close. They respect each other work-wise, and they work well together, but not like the best of type friends. Those two guys were friends. They were close. And so then your friend gets fired and you get your opportunity. That's tough. And then obviously it's tough because you're not sure what the direction the organization is going to go.